Welcome to So Many Bits. I'm your host, Bill Nielsen, and joining me from this palatial VoIP line on the internet is Brandon Shockney. Brandon, how are you?
Hey, Bill, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. Brandon, I finally saw Into the Spider-Verse for the first time.
Oh, man. What did you think?
I liked it a lot. I felt like maybe there were some similarities, maybe a few too many similarities to a Lego movie, which is made by Lord and Miller, the same creative team. Mm-hmm. So that was not perfect, but I would really still strongly recommend it.
Yes, it's in my mind the perfect movie, but I am horribly biased, I have a feeling. So, because I have a grown-in love for Spider-Man, so I had no choice but to love this movie.
Well, I think it really does the Spider-Man franchise proud, maybe even more so than a lot of the live-action films, because it shows such an expansive breadth of different spider people.
I agree. I think it just, it pushes the limit in terms of animation and incorporating all these different styles and new techniques that they use just for this movie. And I'm just continually impressed every time I watch it. Not only the story and the characters and the voice acting, but also just the way it looks on a pure visual level is really, really great.
Well, we will get to some other talk about television and or film in a little bit. Mm-hmm. First, I do want to mention that later on in this episode, I'll be talking with William Cheer, who is the head designer behind Manifold Garden, an upcoming video game that's being made right here in Chicago. So we'll have a one-on-one interview with him later on. But first, Brandon, you and I have to do some screen watching.
Yes, I'm ready.
I was outside watching some deer frolic. You don't even care about the outside, do you?
So for this one, we've got a regular show. The title of this episode is Video Game Wizards, Season 3, Episode 19. Original air date, March 26th. 2012. Now, Brandon, do you have any familiarity with Regular Show?
You know what? It's been one of those cartoons that has kind of been in my queue, my Hulu queue for a while. I kind of just, I know of it on a very surface level. I know it's kind of along the same lines as shows like, I feel like Adventure Time and like Gumball, The Amazing World of Gumball, like that era of modern like children's cartoons, this is the first full episode I've watched was the Video Game Wizards.
Yeah, I was also kind of familiar with Regular Show before. I knew it was like from that same era of cartoons, but I've only watched like a couple episodes here and there, seen a few clips online, so this is all pretty much new to me. So for the unfamiliar, a Regular Show features Mordecai, who is an anthropomorphic bluebird, and Rigby, who is an anthropomorphic raccoon? Badger thing? I don't really know.
I think you're like a raccoon, I think.
Like a raccoon? Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So they're kind of slackers, and they are always trying to put off work any way they can. But in this episode, they've got a new objective.
Yes, they are trying to win a video game tournament in order to claim the top prize, the maximum glove.
Yeah, and at the start, Mordecai is trying to hide it because he wants to play with this other guy, Skips, who is a giant gorilla who wears
Yeti?
Jeans. Yeti?
Oh, yeah, maybe Yeti. Maybe it's a gorilla. I was trying to figure out what he was exactly. I'm just very fascinated by the Regular Show world because it seems like everyone else in the episode was just a straight up human. But, you know, Mordecai and Rigby are clearly animals, and Skips, I'm not even really sure what he is. So I'm just curious what is kind of going on in this world. Is this supposed to be like our world, but there just also happens to be like talking animals within it, because that's what it seems like.
So they work in a park. They're like the maintenance or servicing team facilities for a park, and I think everyone who works there is not human. Like the boss is a gumball machine, and then there's also like a ghost and a zombie they hang out with.
Of course, that makes perfect sense.
But for this episode, yeah, they're trying. Mordecai and Skips are going to go play in the this video game tournament to try and win a maximum glove, which is legally distinct from a power glove. Do not sue.
Yeah, no, clearly inspired by the Nintendo Power Glove.
And starting here and going through the entire episode are a bunch of references to The Wizard. So like in the ad, they say, "It's so bad," writes it right off the jump. So you know where their head's at.
Yeah, right.
Rigby is really, really upset that he doesn't get to play with Mordecai because they're best friends and they play a lot of video games together. But Rigby has a horrible secret. He's bad at video games.
Yeah, and the video game they're playing at the top of the episode, it looked like an Atari to me, kind of, right? It's got a cartridge in there, and they're playing some sort of like fighting game, like it looks like a karate fighting game.
Yeah, I agree. It looks like an Atari. I think some other time I saw another clip where they were playing something that looked a lot like the Sega Master System. So the creators definitely are drawing on like an 80s video game history for this.
Yeah, because there's jokes they're making about how you know, Rigby had to like enter in this complicated button pattern just to get past level one. So that whole idea that back when video games were like very hard and like it took like real skill to get through like just different levels, that rang true to me for that era of video games for sure.
And I have to admit that between the two, I'm probably a lot more like Rigby than Mordecai. I'm sensitive. I hate rejection. So like when Rigby is really upset that he doesn't get to play, and then he spends like three quarters of the episode like passive aggressively taking it out on Mordecai and Skips, I could feel where that was coming from.
You could relate. My favorite joke was the mixtape that he brought in the car that he just plays. That's like clearly was recorded like right before they got in the car. I thought that was very funny.
That was really good. Yeah. Like you could easily have had it be like a 2 second thing where like it starts playing and you get the idea, but then it just keeps going and going. And at the end, and on the tape, there's like a knocking on the door and it's like, dude, we're about to leave. What are you doing in there?
That's what made it right. That the fact that it just kind of was relentless was very fun. Yeah, no, I enjoyed the episode overall. I think it's so interesting. I feel like the voice actor for Mordecai has such a distinct voice that I feel like you don't hear in like cartoons. He sounds almost too human, almost like too like a real, how like a real person talks and not how like a cartoon talks. I just found it very interesting. I guess I hadn't heard his voice before this episode, so I just found his performance to be really intriguing.
Yeah, I think that is actually by design, because Mordecai is voiced by the creator of the show, J.G. Quintel. So I don't believe he has any background as a voice actor, which is probably why his voice sounds so distinct.
Yeah, no, that's and I think it works for the show. It gives a certain vibe to the whole thing. I thought the dynamic between Mordecai and Rigby was fun. There was a, like, did you notice there was a weird amount of like pushing? Like Mordecai kept pushing Rigby like down to the ground. Yeah. And I was like, why does he keep doing that? I don't think that's like the right message we want to send like kids. Like if you get in a fight with your friend, just push them down on the ground.
You're right. Yeah, that was Mordecai is pretty hard on Rigby throughout this entire episode, and it's all the physical violence is a little strange because Mordecai is like very tall, like by the standards of this cartoon, probably like 5.5-6 feet, and Rigby is like 2 feet tall.
Right. Yeah. No. It was just a weird thing that stood out to me of like, man, he's really like going after Rigby, but of course he learns a lesson. And they play together in what is like a supernatural twist that I was like, wow, I can't believe we're going into this in like the last 2 minutes of the episode.
Yeah, like you see kind of where it's headed. Now, like Mordecai did, his intentions were good. He wanted to like team with Skip so he could win the trophy for him and Rigby. And Skips was like cool enough to go along with it. But at the very end, they realize, no, we should just play together and have the most fun. And then they get like zapped away to talk to a giant hand with an eyeball in it. And the hand is like, you have finally understood the greatest lesson no gamer could ever understand. To have fun while playing video games.
And then they turn into this like muscular giant that, and they're like fused together.
Not like Dragon Ball fuse though.
No, like they have two heads and like multiple pairs of arms, and they're horrifying looking, but they win. I feel like any other cartoon would just have it be like they decide to have fun and then they lose, but it's okay because they had fun. But instead it's like, no, they tapped into this like ancient power and they win at the end.
Like it, you see a quick shot of like their enemies in the finals and they're just too shocked to play anymore when they see the fusion.
And I also didn't understand how how this competition was happening, because it was like two different arcade machines that were just like back to back. And I was like, is that how that works? Like, are they connected somehow? They're two separate machines that they're both playing on.
You know, there's like some cables that are like running under the floor pan. No, it's evocative more than like realistic for sure.
And like they're all playing the game. I kept being curious. The game was like two like people in like karate gis versus two people that are like clearly ninjas, and then two people that are like all different types of, I guess, martial art characters. They were everywhere. But no, I enjoyed the episode. I thought the joke at the end, just taking the wind out of the power glove right at the very end, like, this isn't a very good controller, was a fun way to wrap it up.
Yeah, you know, I never personally owned a power glove when I was a kid, but from everything I've read, they were really, really bad controllers. Like, there is some sort of primitive... Actually, I don't even know if there is like a motion sensor in there. I think you're just supposed to play with like a D-pad and buttons on the glove. Like, it doesn't actually do anything if you twist it on your wrist.
Oh, yeah. I've always been curious of what the power glove actually does. But yeah, I can't imagine it works. It functions too well.
No. And it was even funny there that like they had one last little the wizard reference, because like it seems like the game they're playing is supposed to resemble Rad Racer, which is the game in the wizard that the bad kid plays with the power glove. So like that was one last little Easter egg there, which was pretty cute.
Man, you picked up on that. I feel like I saw the wizard once when I was like 7 or 8, and I don't remember a thing about it. But I'm sure if it was fresher in my memory, those would be playing for me a bit more.
Well, Brandon, it is fresh in my memory because recently I did a screen watching of The Wizard, and in fact, I even put out the commentary that other host Diabilic and I put together for the episode as a podcast episode. So if you're looking to hear me talk about The Wizard, it's out there.
All right, that might be a Saturday night for me. Watch The Wizard and listen to your commentary. It'd be like you're sitting there watching it with me.
Wherever you go. Whatever you do, I will be right. So, Brandon, as always with these episodes, we rate them on three different categories. And with like any video game, they are rated on a scale of 6 to 10. And those categories are accuracy, condescension, and entertainment. So let's start out with accuracy. So from a scale of 6 to 10, where 6 is completely inaccurate to 10 is lifelike accuracy, how would you rate the accuracy of this episode of Regular Show?
You know what? I'm going to give it a middle of the road. I'm going to give it an 8 because I think there was some stuff that was very specific and referencing something very specific. And I think Because of that, you have to give it props. But I also think some other things were kind of more broad and not thoroughly done well, intentionally so, right? So I think that balance, I would put it middle of the road, about an 8.
Well, I'm going to have to go with an 8 as well. I feel like, yeah, there were some very good references there, but the actual gameplay they tried to show, it didn't feel like a real video game to me. Like they had the general gist of like what a video game should look like, but it didn't quite resonate for me in the way I think it was intended to. So then next we have Condescension. So if you feel this was not condescending towards gamers at all, give it a 6. And if you feel it was extremely condescending, give it a 10. How would you rate it, Brandon?
Man, I feel like this is the boring choice, but I'm going to go, again, middle of the road, 8. I think it's specific enough it's making references, like you said, to popular things like wizards and whatnot, that clearly there's a deep-seated appreciation for video games somewhere in here with the writers and whatever. But also, I feel like it's taking shots at that era of video games, right? It takes a shot at the Power Glove and takes shots at how the games kind of look and function. So, I would go middle of the road and say an 8 on that as well.
Okay, I think I would be I'd go with a 7. I feel like they did make a little bit of fun of gamers with like the jokes at the end. They're like, oh, you're the first gamers who haven't tried to ruin it by competition. But for the most part, it's like, oh, this is a tournament that people want to play in and win. And like, it's just like a normal thing that all like the main characters, Skips, Mordecai, and Rigby want to do. So yeah, I would go with a 7 on that, I think. And then lastly, entertainment. If you were completely unentertained and you wanted to just like shut off the episode, give this a 6. And if you were supremely entertained and you immediately started it again after watching it the first time, give it a 10.
You know what? I think I'll go an 8.5 here. I won't give it so middle of the road, but I'm going to give it a little bit above the middle here. I found it as my first experience into the regular show world. Maybe it's not the best in terms of showcasing what the show, like a good example of what the show is overall, but I feel like it gave me a good idea of the character's dynamic. There were a few comedy bits in there that I thought hit really well, and I just like the look of the characters. I think they the designs like interesting and whatnot, so I would give that an 8.5. I would it made me curious to see more episodes of the show.
All right, I'm gonna go with a 9. I thought it was pretty funny. I enjoyed a few of the jokes that were in there. I really liked the "why aren't you saying maximum" line a bit. liked all the wizards references. And the only thing that was holding it back is, yeah, like kind of at the end where it got so surreal and strange, like I didn't, you know, it's a cartoon, but I didn't feel like that was really earned. It was just like such a sharp left turn that it was like, whoa, okay, all right. And then they just like snapped back into like a more regular scene at the very, very end of the cartoon. So, I mean, I guess if that's like the thing that this show does, that's fair enough. But yeah, I would go with a 9. Okay, and so I think that brings this segment of screen watching to a close, Brandon. When we return from break, I'll be talking to William Cheer about Manifold Garden. And we are back from break. Joining me on the line at this time is William Cheer. Today, William and I are going to be talking about his game, Manifold Garden. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
So just, I guess, first off, for the listener, if they're not familiar with Manifold Garden, could you give perhaps an elevator pitch of the general sense of the game?
Sure. Basically, it's a game that imagines a world with a completely different set of physical rules, a counterfactual physics game. So the world wraps around on itself. You can change gravity 6 different directions. And it's really about exploring space and architecture and the rules of physics within that environment.
Now, when we met 3 years ago, it was at a kind of like a, I'm not sure what I would call it, like a festival or an event to show off different games as they're being developed. And at that time, I'm assuming it was maybe more of an alpha or a beta build of the game. From then until now, how have you changed over that time?
The first 3 years of development, I think I was always under the impression, and I think when we met, I kept thinking that the game was 2 months away from release. So there was, I wouldn't call it crunch, but perhaps that is what it was. I was sort of in this constant crunch mode, thinking that we had to get it, you know, work on the game more and get it done soon. And that, I think it was around that period I kind of realized it is a marathon and not a sprint. I would say that the past 3 years, the total development time at this point is over 6 years. And I would say the last 3 years have been much better than the first 3 years in terms of managing my time, life, work-life balance. Yeah, I've definitely just become more aware of my own limits, my own limitations, and what setup I need to work best.
Now, in the past, you have worked as, among other things, an artist in residence, a research technician, a computer engineer. Did you always envision that you would end up working in the games medium?
No, not at all. I mean, I think when I was 10 and was playing a lot of Tony Hawk Pro Skater on the N64, I thought it'd be cool to make video games, but it wasn't really anything, certainly wasn't a career that I had considered while in school or the few years immediately after.
With regards, again, to those past experiences, how, if at all, are you able to draw on them when either designing Manifold or envisioning the world of Manifold Garden?
Well, I did study physics, and I worked in a physics lab in Italy for a summer when I was in school. And so I think the initial inspiration for the game of wanting to explore new sets of physical rules, that is directly from, you know, my own experience. I think architecture is another huge influence on the game, and I had considered going to architecture school. That was something I was exploring after I graduated from college, but I remember when I was filling out the application, it had asked me a question, why I wanted to become an architect, and I really couldn't come up with a good answer besides making cool looking stuff. And I certainly, looking back now, I realize that totally would have been the wrong, you know, even if I had gone in to architecture school, it would have been for the wrong reasons. And while I do enjoy making these spaces and these buildings in Manifold Garden, I think this experience is very different from what it's like to actually be an architect. So I sort of have the best of that world in what I'm doing now with Manifold Garden. You know, there's no clients, you don't have to deal with building codes and materials and construction crews and all sorts of stuff like that, zoning.
With the final product of Manifold Garden, should players expect one continuous open world experience, or would it be more of an instanced experience where there are different like levels to play?
Well, it is open world in the sense that there are no loading screens in the game, so every level is connected to every other. I think open world is a bit of a tricky term because I think people usually use it to refer to games like GTA, Assassin's Creed, where you have this massive area that you can run around and sort of choose whatever you want to do. It's not quite like that. There is still a somewhat linear experience, but once you've opened up all the levels, you can go between them without a loading screen in between. And a pretty significant part of our design goal is to create a seamless experience between the spaces. For example, in terms of the music in the game, one thing that we are very adamant about is not having the music start and end based on where the doors are, because I think that enhances the the separation between spaces. Really, the door is sort of more just a hallway connecting. It's more of a transition area connecting two spaces, but it should not be seen as room A ends here and room B starts here.
One other aspect of the game world that might not meet traditional expectations, I recall this from playing the game myself and watching a little bit of gameplay elsewhere, that physics don't work as you might traditionally expect. I think it might be an Escherian appearance where you can...
Escher-esque, I think is the word. Yeah.
Was having that physics background important to knowing like what rules you could bend or break?
Not really. I think that it was sort of pretty easy to break those, especially in a game engine. I think honestly what has come in much handier is a lot of the math from high school, linear algebra and programming, because it's easy to come up with alternatives to the physical rules. What if gravity behaved like this? What if this number was X instead of Y? But getting it all in the game and getting it all to work together has been the bulk of the work. You know, I think those initial physics ideas came within the first 10 minutes, first few days, and really, we've been spending the last 6 years trying to get those all working together and make it cohesive.
Getting everything to work together, we've been working to make things cohesive. Can you tell me a bit about the rest of the team working on the game and like what roles they fill?
Sure. So I was working by myself for, I think, the first 3 years of the game. And at the time, I think this would have been 2015, 2016, I thought I was getting close to shipping and needed more help. I think I also wasn't very confident in my own abilities as a programmer. So initially, the first person that came on board was a programmer. He since left the project, but he was brought on initially to kind of work on the architecture of the game, tie everything together. I have since learned that that is not necessarily the best thing to outsource. And of course, I have, you know, eventually I ended up setting that architecture myself, and we've built on it since. But knowing how the game works, knowing how it should be structured, that I think was something I needed to do myself. It couldn't be avoided. So the current team, I think we have about 7 or 8 people. It varies because some people are sort of on an as-needed basis. The core of the team, we have a musician, a sound designer. There's a graphics programmer, a VFX programmer, just sort of a general gameplay programmer. And then we've got people doing optimization and the PS4 port as well.
It sounds like you were pretty happy with the lack of regulation in games as compared to architecture. And I imagine compared to making art in the past, also there are less rules for that.
Well, maybe. I think when it comes to, certainly in terms of content and gameplay, I think there are definitely market forces at play that you have to take into consideration. There is also, of course, if you're doing console versions of the game, then there are rules on what you can and cannot do.
And that's actually what I was hoping to find out. Are there any... any rules or unexpected guidelines that you need to follow as part of developing the game?
Yeah, and I think, like I said, console. I can't really talk too much about that stuff because it's NDA. But certainly, I think a very basic one is you have to use the terminology for the appropriate console. So obviously, the PS4 version, you can't be saying press X, press A. You have to be, has to use the, or I guess you can use X since that is a button, but you can't be displaying Xbox controls. And I think there's also a certain technical requirement that your game has to meet. And those wouldn't necessarily exist, I think, if you were just doing a art project that you were going to show in a gallery.
I've noticed on following you on Twitter is that you have a very regular, consistent Twitch schedule for streaming out your work on game development. And like I've seen some other teams that like they have like a YouTube page or something like that. But you have a 5-day-a-week schedule. You have a very clearly delineated information all on your Twitch page. Was that something that was important to you to increasing the exposure of the game, or what was the purpose behind diving in so deeply, I would say, on Twitch?
Yeah, initially it was just to explore the platform. This was, I think I started streaming around 2016, and that was, by then it had started to become a very big player, Twitch in games. And that's, you know, we were seeing GDC talks about the importance of marketing to streamers. And Manifold Garden is not really that type of game, but I did want to dive into it to see what this was all about. And I really wasn't expecting much at first. Since then, it has honestly been one of the best parts of development. I think one of the best decisions I've made. We have a really strong community. It's very positive. When I first started, it was, well, nobody was watching. And we'd get two people here and there. And I actually stopped streaming for a while because I got so burned out. My original schedule, you know, I just sort of went 100% at first. And my schedule when I first started was like 8 to 10 p.m. every night, every weekday night. And I got burned out, I think, after 6 months.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, that schedule means like, you know, it's after dinner, I'm tired, I've already had a full day of work and we're coming on board. And I didn't really do a very good job with moderation. So that community turned very toxic very quickly. I ended up shutting that down or taking a hiatus. And then when I came back, it was like, I'm just going to stream whenever I feel like it. And then from there, I kind of realize what times in the day work best. And still, you know, I do say 3 to 4:30 p.m. that's when I'll be there, but sometimes if I'm busy with administrative work or console dev, right, and I can't stream that, then I just don't stream. But nowadays, you know, I stream in the morning, stream late in the evening, and I think almost at any time without prior announcement, we'll still get about 20-30 people in the chat.
When I was reading your press information page on your website.
I think that's very outdated, by the way.
There was one thing, though, that struck me, though, is you had a sentence in there, I'm probably best known for, and you listed a few accomplishments, including well-known advertisements and beer labels. And I guess what I'm wondering now is, after you are finished with Manifold Garden, how would you finish that sentence where you say, I'm probably best known for blank?
Well, I probably wouldn't say I'm probably best known for it, because that sounds silly in retrospect. I probably would just say I made Manifold Garden, or you know, I worked on Manifold Garden, or I was the creator of it. I don't think I would say I made, because I think that is not take into account all of the other collaborators and contributors. I mean, honestly, the game has gotten so much better since we brought other people on board. And I know Arthur, who joined in 2017, he really took the art style up to 11. Like, it's still, the core of it is still the same, but we look at the edge detection now, we look at the color correction and just the visuals, and without his technical work, I think the game would not look anywhere near as good.
Well, I'm glad to hear that it's really coming along. I know you're probably really eager to get it out the door at this point.
Yeah, there's still a lot left to do, but yeah, we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. There's where we're working on the, just sort of wrapping up the ending. It's a second version of the ending. Actually, one of the things that I'm, what's made it hard is not so much the design of it, but just finding time to do design, because so much of my time these days is taken up with production work, talking to platforms, managing the team.
podcast interviews.
This is actually the first one I've done in about two years. So maybe the second one in 2 years. But yes, they're pretty rare occurrence for me now.
Would you hope that once people have played Manifold Garden, they come away with a certain feeling? Not that they have to feel that way, but that there is a feeling you are imbuing in the game, and you hope they have that feeling as well?
I think I used to have a much clearer idea of what feelings I wanted people to walk away with, and really if they enjoyed it, if they had a good time, if it felt like a new experience for them, that makes me happy. But I don't have very specific ideas or feelings that I want them to, you know, there isn't, we do have our own interpretation of different elements, but we're not like, oh, somebody didn't get the game. That is not, I think maybe the first 2 years I was thinking along those lines, but nowadays, not so much.
Well, I do have two final questions here I'd like to ask you. First of all, we do have a very specific thing in common, that we both share the same given name. We are both William. Now, I've gone through an evolution of, I was Billy.
Yeah.
And I switched to Bill as I entered college because I wanted people to take me more seriously. Have you ever done any variations on William or any other nicknames as you've gone through life?
Yes, I think it's the Robert, William, you know, you problem. You have Bobby, Rob, then you're Robert, and maybe later on you're Bob. We're back to Bobby. Yeah, I was, you know, went by Will in high school, and my last name, Cheer. I got the nickname Wheelchair. Wheelchair.
Okay.
So that's just how kids are. And when I went to college, in my dorm, there was a Bill and a Will, and I didn't really want to be William. So I think that I started going by Willie at the time. And then, of course, I think that's how a lot of people, you can kind of, depending on like what people call me, I sort of know when they met me in my life. And I think it was like, I'm 31 now. And I think when I was 27, and especially as I started streaming and become a little bit more public, the Willie just didn't feel appropriate anymore. It was, I don't know, too intimate, perhaps my own panic about, you know, approaching 30. But then I started going by William, and that's now, you know, people close to me, you know, sometimes go by Will. But yeah, it is sort of an evolution. I haven't quite made the transition to Bill, but I think that is something in the future.
All right.
Yeah. It's going to take me a bit of a, you know, I'm on a detour before I get there.
We're definitely united, though, that Billium is totally out of the question.
Right? No, that is, maybe if I become a rapper or something.
All right. And then the final question I have is, William, I think among all gamers, there is some familiarity with Pokemon, either with the Game Boy games or the anime or Pokemon Go. And I was wondering of you, if you could have one Pokemon to be your pet, one Pokemon you could be, and one Pokemon you could eat, what would those be?
So I have to be perfectly honest with you, is that I have never played any of the Pokemon games. I did watch the cartoon when I was a kid, just, you know, I mean, 97, 98, everybody was crazy about it, but I did not own a Game Boy. I only owned a N64, which I think only had the photo, the picture-taking Pokemon game.
That was a good game, too.
But I did not play it, because it always felt like not the real... It always felt more like a supplementary game than kind of the core Pokemon experience.
Fair. That's fair.
and I've not played Pokemon Go, so the only Pokemon I can name off the top of my head is Pikachu.
We can be flexible, though. Pikachu can be a pet. You do not have to dine on Pikachu.
Right. Yeah, if I can choose between all of them, the pet, be, and eat, I would definitely do the pet. Yes.
Okay. All right. So you would like to have Pikachu as a pet. I think that's a... Oh, you know, that reminded me. There was another N64 game. I think it was like you had a microphone and you could yell at Pikachu to like do things in the game.
This was a peripheral, a mic as a peripheral, or in the game you had a microphone?
You had a peripheral microphone, and I think it was
for the N64.
Yeah, I think it was called, I think it was Hey You Pikachu.
No way, I did not know that existed.
Well, when you have some free time in the future, you know, go on Craigslist, get an N64 and a copy of Hey You Pikachu, and, you know, revisit that.
We actually do have my roommate's got an N64, and... We do boot up a Tony Hawk Pro Skater every now and then.
Listen to that muffled version of Goldfinger.
The 30-second loop or something. I think it's like it's not the full song, right? Just like 60 seconds of it.
I mean, I'm right there with you, though. That's how I played Tony Hawk back in the day. That's how I played Resident Evil 2 also. So then in that case, William, thank you so much for your time. If you want people to find you online and find updates on Manifold Garden, where can they find them?
Well, you can go to the Manifold Garden website, and I'm very proud of the URL because it is manifold.garden.
Hey.
And then, of course, I'm on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, and I always use the same handle. It's just my name, William Cheer. We also have the Manifold Garden Instagram page, which I'm very proud of. Incredibly impractical to maintain. And that's just at instagram.com/manifoldgarden.
Well, all right, William Cheer, thank you so much for your time.
Great, thank you.
And we're back. One more time, big thanks to William Cheer. Really rooting for Manifold Garden to get out there and sell 1 gazillion copies.
A gazillion?
That's my official projection. Yeah, wowzers indeed. William is one of the... I met him a few years ago now where he was doing... There was this tiny festival they were running at the Cards Against Humanity office where they were showing off a few different video games, and he was there. And we got to chatting, and it was totally unrelated to the podcast. It was just like I was there as a fan of video games, and when I kind of got into this whole interviewing thing, I was like, I should look him up and see how that's going. And sounds like it's getting pretty close to a finished product. So good on you, Brandon. Before we go though, there's one final thing we have to take care of. I need your help on this. We have to handle Bill's Magic Minute.
Yes, the magic-filled minute. The magical minute. Bill the Magician.
So as always with this, I'm going to talk for 1 minute, approximately, about Magic the Gathering with no context or no real attempt to educate on what's going on. We're just going to fire through it so I don't feel tempted to do so in other parts of the podcast. Now, Brandon, as always, I randomly determine how much time I'm going to get of 1 minute, and for this I got 42 seconds after rolling 3d20s here.
Not bad.
So I'll be counting on you to keep time for me, and my topic for this week is going to be the alternate art planeswalkers in War of the Sparks. Just let me know when you're ready to start that clock.
Okay, 42 seconds and not 1 second more. And that starts now.
I was really, really excited to see the alternate art planeswalkers that are appearing in the Japanese print run of War of the Spark. There's a lot of great art in there. And in fact, I'm particularly interested in the Liliana Dreadhorde, whatever, card that's got Amano's art. Amano being the guy who drew all the old school Final Fantasy art. I hope this encourages Wizards to branch out a little bit from their typical art that they offer on the cards, because it's got a very manga feel, or manga, I don't know. And it doesn't have to always be like in their exact style guide that they put out for every new set, where everything has to look exactly the same. Cards
and time.
All right. That's all I get to say about that topic. We will not be revisiting that ever again.
Oh no! Wow, that's all. That's it, folks.
That's it. Oh, that's all,
that,
folks.
That's it, everybody. That's the alternate thing that Porky Pig says.
Is he allowed to say that? I mean, legally?
Yeah, great joke.
But that does bring this episode of So Many Bits to a close. Brandon, thank you so much for joining me. We'll have you back on for next week so we can talk about the games we've been playing recently.
Bill, thank you for having me.
You are welcome. Yeah, we'll have you back on next week to talk about the games we've been playing lately. But until then, if you want people to find you, either in person or electronically, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at BEEShock. So please find me there. I'm also on Twitch, although I don't play too often lately because I got myself a puppy. And my puppy takes up basically 90% of my time. but when I'm not taking care of him, you can find me at BEE_shock on Twitch.
It feels like you could be leveraging your new puppy either into an alternate kind of Twitch channel or into an Instagram account.
Ooh, you know what? He does appear on my Twitter every once in a while. In fact, my latest tweet has his puppy certificate. He just graduated puppy kindergarten. So if you want to see Parker, yes, he is named after Peter Parker, then check him out on my Twitter.
Training certificate. This is to certify that Parker has successfully completed the name redacted program on May 18th, 2019. So congratulations to Parker.
Yes, congrats, Parker. You're the best boy.
Well, as for us, we can be reached by email at somanybitspodcast@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook, we're So Many Bits on there. Follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at So Many Bits. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Please rate and review or download from Spreaker, from SoundCloud, from YouTube, or stream through Spotify. We play games, twitch.tv/somanybits. I'm on there Wednesday and Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central Time. Wednesdays for Magic the Gathering Online or MTG Arena. Thursdays for a variety of different games. Recently, we've been playing Nier Automata, SteamWorld Quest, Resident Evil 2, Marvel's Spider-Man for the PS4, a bunch of different stuff. Pretty much a new game every week. So otherwise, yeah, check us out in one of those locations. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great summer.
Bye-bye.